So I'm joined in the studio with Maya Cueva, who's a fellow here at Latino USA. Hey, Maya.
Hi, Antonia.
You started here in March, and very early on in your time here, there was this day that I came into the office and I looked around and I go, hey, has anyone heard of Alejandra Pablos?
Yeah, and I had because she was all over my Twitter and Instagram feed. I've, you know, done a few documentaries on reproductive health. I've just been following that movement.
Right. And I follow a lot of dreamers. I follow a lot of youth activists. That's something we cover a lot here on the show. And those were the people who kept, like, reposting her image.
Yeah.
And by image, that's what I want to say. The thing is, like, it wasn't just her name. It was, like, there was these pictures of Alejandra that were on my Instagram and on my Twitter. And it was this Mexican-American girl with, like, a septum piercing and these big earrings and, like, these really cool outfits that look like outfits Beyonce would wear. And I was just like, who is this woman who keeps popping up all over my Twitter feed?
So we did a little Google search, and we found out she's an undocumented activist. And we also came across her web series. It's called Brown and Bruja.
So, hey, y'all. Welcome to the crib. Welcome to the crib.
Welcome. Welcome back. Welcome home. This is Brown and Bruja.
And by the way, there's some adult language in her web series, which we've bleeped.
Why brown? Why bruja? As Ale does my nails. Because she's like, oh, my God, I need to do your nails.
And it's just her and her friend, you know, they'll, like, paint each other's nails. They'll just be hanging out. And the main thing that they're talking about is brujería.
Okay, so what is brujería?
The word bruja is just so sexy to me, honestly. Like,
same. Brujería is basically just witchcraft. And for Alejandra, she's sort of reclaiming, like, what does it mean to be a witch in these days as a Latina woman, right? So she'll talk a lot about, like, systems of oppression or resistance or organizing or even trash men.
And also, what are your spell protections for boys? Send us your spell protections. I need one. How do you cleanse yourself?
So it's like a lifestyle, but also a political talk show web series that she does with her friend. But the real reason we kept seeing all of these images of her all of a sudden was because that day in March, Alejandra had been detained by ICE.
You're seeing this. I just got detained by ICE. I'm doing everything that I can. It's been a long time that I've been going through this case, and I need you to stand up for me. I need you to fight for me. As I'm fighting inside, you please fight outside.
So right after she was detained, a campaign demanding her release was launched by Mi Gente, which is a group that organizes around undocumented immigrants. And even the day that she was detained and we came across the petition, it already had hundreds of supporters.
Alejandra is a really good friend of mine. I want to show her my support, and I want to bring strength to her, and I want to bring my love.
The thing that really amazed me about this campaign, apart from how fast it was growing, was just like it looked and felt different than any campaign I've ever seen. Normally, when there's a campaign around someone's release, the person is presented in a really sort of clean-cut way. Either there's students in caps and gowns, or sometimes it's a man in a suit. It seems like they're appealing to a really broad American audience. Kind of like they're saying, we're young academics and professionals. This is why we should be allowed to stay here. And Alejandra's image is of this, like, radical brown bruja girl. It doesn't look like she's trying to appeal to middle mainstream America. But instead, she's speaking right to a young millennial POC audience. And I don't think I've ever seen a campaign like that before.
Yeah, so we really wanted to find out, one, who is Alejandra and why is she getting so much attention? And two, what does her story tell us about how undocumented activism is changing?
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Antonia Cerejido in for María Hinojosa. And today we are telling the story of Alejandra Pablos, an undocumented immigrant rights activist who was detained by ICE. So Maya, why don't you take the story from here?
In order to tell Alejandra's story, we have to go back to 1986, the year she was born. Alejandra was born in Mexico, right on the border with Arizona in a city called Nogales. When she was a baby, her parents immigrated to Santa Ana in California. She was raised by her mom.
I lived with all adult women, single women. My mom has six siblings, and I was the firstborn.
I grew up watching novelas, not cartoons that much.
As a kid in the 90s, she remembers really being into school. She even got an academic award from Bill Clinton.
I just was in love with the idea of just being at school and being a teacher's pet, which is really like the opposite of who I am now.
Her love for school started to fade once she became a teenager. When Alejandra was 14, her mom was stressed for cash and decided to move the family to Tucson, Arizona, where it would be cheaper to start a business.
I did not like the idea.
At her new high school in Arizona, she started smoking weed and ditching class. She says it was also hard to stay motivated.
I wasn't really stimulated during high school. You know, our schools were in the South Side. It just wasn't stimulating to me.
She also started bumping heads with her family, including her brother, Jesus.
Probably based on our personalities, my sister has always been free-spirited, kind of tested the boundaries at home with my mom.
Her brother says it was challenging at times to be around his sister as a teenager because she was starting to be more rebellious and act up. Alejandra craved more independence. At 16, she was itching to get her first job.
I was ready to, you know, buy my own things and help my mom out and, you know, support my own self. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, you need a social security. And I was like, great, where do I get one?
What Alejandra didn't fully realize at the time is that she was undocumented.
I literally lived all of my life just not even thinking of anything like that documentation status. Like, my mom had it, you know, it was just never a thing in my family.
What happened is that when Alejandra's parents immigrated to the U.S. in the early 80s, they were able to get papers through the so-called Reagan Amnesty, when the government provided a path to citizenship to 3 million people who were in the country illegally.
I supported this bill. I believe in the idea of amnesty for those who have put down roots and who have lived here, even though sometime back they may have entered illegally.
Since Alejandra was a baby when her parents immigrated, they thought that since they were able to get citizenship, Alejandra would automatically get hers as well. But that wasn't true. They didn't know they actually had to petition for Alejandra to be documented. And since everyone else in her family, including her brother, were citizens, Alejandra never thought she would be different.
I thought it would all get worked out. I thought it was just a mistake.
Eventually, she got her green card by petitioning through her parents, and she was able to start working. At age 18, she started college. It was after graduating that she started feeling a bit lost. She didn't really know what she wanted to do.
I started bartending and waitressing at nightclubs. That's where my environment changed a little bit, you know? I had a lot of fun working at the nightclub. I had a lot of fun because I love music. I love to dance. You know, I was like, I can dance, hear music all night, and get paid. This is clearly a win-win situation. I think that's the time that I got my first DUI and then my second DUI.
One night, Alejandra was driving from Phoenix to Tucson when an officer pulled her over for driving too slow.
And then he's like, and I kind of smelled a little bit of marijuana.
So Alejandra admits to the officer that she had smoked the day before, but hadn't that day.
I even was like naive and dumb at the time, but I was like, look, I even have my little blunt, but like it's intact, it's full. Like, I'm not smoking. Like, it just smells because I am a smoker. And then he's like, well, I'm going to have to take your blood or I'm going to arrest you.
The officer ended up taking Alejandra to the local station to test her blood. And she was charged with another DUI. And while this was all happening, Alejandra still didn't fully understand how getting in trouble would affect her chances of getting her citizenship.
So there's a law that says, like, you cannot commit any crimes within your first 5 years. So, like I said, not knowing this and being completely oblivious to any of this, you know, I go on about my life.
Along with the DUIs, Alejandra was also charged with possession of paraphernalia in 2010. Her lawyer at the time advised her to plead guilty to the possession and told her that it would just lead to a year of probation and a misdemeanor.
So he said, so it won't affect you in immigration.
But it led to a lot more. Alejandra ended up losing her permanent resident card. She was put on probation, and 5 months later, her probation officer called ICE.
It was September. I remember September 22nd of 2011. I went to go have my 5th month meeting with her, and there was ICE. They told me they were taking me to Mexico. I literally thought I was leaving to Mexico.
What actually happened was that Alejandra was placed in a detention center in Arizona, known as the Eloy Detention Center. She was only 25. Inside Eloy, Alejandra became just another body in a pool of orange jumpsuits. And at the beginning, she took it as an opportunity to work on herself. In her mind, this was an opportunity to start over. She tried to make the best of her circumstance.
I was busy every day. I would wake up every day at 6 a.m. I would, you know, first thing in the morning, I work in the lobby. I would start exercising by 7 a.m. I did P90X and Zumba and all those things. I was so skinny. I would go outside every day during our rec time and I would walk for an hour, like speed walk, but also read. I have like that, those skills.
She also didn't really have to worry about life outside, like paying bills.
It was really nice, like, to not have to think of all those things and really focus on yourself.
But eventually, she began to notice how terrible the conditions inside the detention center really were. She says the detainees were basically treated like inmates. Some women even had stomach ulcers from the food and water. One day, Alejandra says, she saw a guard forcing a woman to put on uncomfortable shoes. The woman had third-degree burns on her feet.
You know, literally she was in bandages.
The woman couldn't speak English, and the guard wouldn't allow her to eat lunch until she changed her shoes. Another detainee called Alejandra over to help translate.
So I remember, you know, being there and making a big ruckus and, you know, asking for the manager and really like fighting this officer there and translating and finally getting this woman to be allowed to go eat lunch with her Crocs in there.
At this point, she didn't really consider herself political. But she realized she could help the other women at Eloy, since she was one of the few who could speak English in her pod. After about a year and a half in detention, in 2013, a new group of detainees came to Eloy. Unlike many of the older women who were in Alejandra's pod, these were young people, just like her. It was a group of undocumented immigrant activists who even went by a name. The Dream Nine.
The Dream Nine, as they've come to be known, were brought here as children. These dreamers are at the center of a national controversy, immigration reform.
The Dream Nine were immigrant rights activists who purposely got detained to organize inside detention centers. They started organizing hunger strikes in Eloy and passed out numbers the detainees could call to seek legal help. They were put in solitary confinement. Their actions lit a fire in Alejandra. She knew if she ever got released, she would dedicate herself to activism.
I did not know how much longer I would be there. I knew that there was people who have been there for 6, 7 years. I knew that we didn't have a final date. I didn't know what was going to happen. So that was the really stressful thing.
Alejandra ended up being detained in the Eloy Detention Center for 2 years. She was finally released on bond in 2013, but with the provision that she do check-ins periodically with ICE.
And I actually came back home with a different identity, like literally a brand new, reborn, undocumented woman.
Coming up on Latino USA, we find out about Alejandra's new life as a bruja and activist, and about what led her to the Eloy Detention Center for the second time. Stay with us, no te vayas.
NPR's Rough Translation is like your best travel experience. It takes you someplace new, and it leaves you with a fresh perspective on home. This season, we follow the go-betweens, people trying to cross a cultural bridge or change the culture they know. Check out Rough Translation wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. When we left off, Alejandra had just been released from the Eloy Detention Center as a new, radicalized, self-proclaimed, undocumented woman. Maya Cueva tells us the rest of the story.
Alejandra felt empowered by her time in the detention center, but she also felt like a marked woman.
So it was really, really tough to try to find a job.
Every time she applied for a job, she would have to check a box asking whether she was a felon. Remember, she had those two DUIs. For months, she applied to nonprofit work and got rejected. But finally, a nonprofit she really admired took her in for an interview, Habitat for Humanity. She filled out the paperwork, but her heart sank when she got to the question she always felt anxious about. Have you ever been convicted of a felony?
I didn't check the felony box this time. It was actually a really tough decision for me. I was like, you know, I want to be upfront. I want people to, like, hire me for who I am, not for who I was or what I've done in the past. But at the time, I felt like I just needed to leave that box unchecked.
So she turned in her application and it worked. She got the job. On her first day, she nervously sat down with her new boss.
I remember her showing me this application when we were there. I'm still, like, really nervous and really, like, scared, you know, because I'm going to work with this, like, really nice, you know, credible organization, right? And she was like, oh, actually, you forgot to fill something out. And she turns the application around to me, and I'm like, oh, man, the felony question. And then she's like, oh, what kind of salary do you want? Which was amazing. It was my first salary job. It was the first time that I was actually able to breathe and pay some of my bills.
Things seem to be back on track for Alejandra. In 2016, she finished her probation for her DUI charges and moved temporarily to D.C. to work for the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health.
And I fell in love with D.C. There was a lot of Latinos, different kinds. I'm from Tucson and I'm from Cali. All I see is Mexicanos, you know, and white folks and a little bit of black folks. So going to D.C. was like, oh, my God, everybody's so fine.
She started setting up these brown girl magic meetups where she would gather women of color to talk about astrology, empowerment, and brujería.
We wanted to talk about brujería because it's something that's always been pushed out, right? And always been villainized, and brujas in sense have always been criminalized too. So for me, being a bruja, I can relate to that because I've also always been criminalized.
It's during this time that she met her best friend, Malaya.
She has the ability to connect with almost anyone instantly.
And together they start Brown and Bruja, her show on YouTube.
And here in Brown and Bruja, yeah, it's for all those folks that are out here rebelling every day, lifting up your voice in this hollow up, racist-ass world. Even though you might feel like you're the only one that's woke, there's a lot of us out here. Join us, roll up.
The whole galaxy, the whole universe.
The Fez is watching, y'all.
So Alejandra starts becoming more provocative, radical, sex-positive. And she gets involved in organizing around reproductive rights. A year later, she has an abortion and is really public about it.
When I think about becoming pregnant and deciding to create a family and start a family, I can't do that when I don't have systems of support. And I can't protect myself from the police, and I sure won't be able to protect, you know, a baby if I decide to be pregnant.
You she know? Starts getting invited to talk about her experience.
Now we are joined by the wonderful, the creative, the beautiful Alejandra. Alejandra, your abortion story and activism are intertwined with your immigration story. Isn't that right?
Yes, absolutely. Being an immigrant person, being a part of a mixed status family has informed my activism and has informed how I advocate for myself and my human rights and my women's rights.
So it's 2016, and at this point, Alejandra's been out of detention for 3 years, and she's really come into herself as an activist. But at the same time, Donald Trump was running for president.
We're going to build the wall. We have no choice. We have no choice.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
And the stakes start getting higher. Activists are intensifying their actions.
An Arizona demonstrator shut down a highway leading to a rally.
Alejandra became more heavily involved with Mi Gente, a group that organizes around immigrant justice.
Three people were arrested, including Jacinta Gonzalez, who had locked her neck to a van's window as part of the roadblock. Gonzalez was then...
Then, of course...
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump!
Activists start to worry about his new policies around immigration.
We will deport all criminal illegal immigrants.
Undocumented activists feel as though they're being specifically targeted.
Are immigration agents targeting undocumented organizers for their political work? That's the question many are asking after three prominent immigrant rights activists in Vermont were jailed by ICE in what local organizers are calling a clear case of political retaliation.
And Alejandra has a sinking suspicion that she might be next.
I also realize that I'm in a state of police, right? I'm in a state that has a lot of state violence, and people have been criminalized and targeted, and I've been criminalized and targeted, and I don't feel safe.
Alejandra often went to protests, even though she knew it was kind of risky because she was undocumented. On January 10th, 2018, she went to a rally protesting deportations in a Department of Homeland Security building located in Richmond, Virginia. She thought it would be a peaceful one.
United in resistance against institutional white supremacy that we see today in the White House.
The protest was outside of the DHS building. Alejandra was with her friends and fellow organizers who said that a DHS officer started to get aggravated about the protest and confronted the crowd.
He said that the police would be coming and they would from there ask us to leave and say that if we don't leave, it would be trespassing.
That's Nelson Dolores Lopez. He's a friend of Alejandra's and was with her the day she was protesting. He says that the DHS officer picked Alejandra out of the crowd.
He specifically pointed to Ale and started approaching her and said that she was under arrest. And he's just like pushing people aside, trying to get to her until he grabs her and then arrests her. And she's the only person arrested.
I reached out to a DHS spokesperson to ask why they arrested Alejandra, but they referred me to local police on the scene, even though it was a DHS officer who made the arrest. Police told me Alejandra was arrested for obstructing justice and trespassing. I followed up multiple times with them to ask why only Alejandra was arrested, and they have not responded. Friends and family of Alejandra's, however, believe she was targeted at the protest that day because of her activism and undocumented status. As we mentioned, these kinds of claims are getting more and more common. For example, there's the story of Daniela Vargas, a 22-year-old from Jackson, Mississippi. She spoke at a news conference about her status and advocacy for immigrant rights and was pulled over by ICE that same day. 2 weeks later, her father and brother were detained as well. So far, most claims of ICE targeting activists haven't been proven. But in at least one case, ICE more or less admitted it. In December of 2017, Maru Mora Villalpando, an activist in Seattle, received a notice from ICE ordering her to appear in immigration court. ICE later released an internal report in which they stated that Maru had come to their attention because of an online article where she talked about being an undocumented activist. The report notes her, quote, extensive involvement with anti-ICE protests and Latino advocacy programs.
Part of the story has been ICE is retaliating against organizers.
Jacinta Gonzalez is the field director for Mi Gente. She's the activist who locked her neck to the van window in Arizona. Jacinta says the political climate is different now for organizing around undocumented rights because ICE, in her words, is going rogue.
We're not operating in easy times, and we are operating in a time where, you know, ICE has a lot of power over people's lives.
I reached out to ICE for comment around the allegations that activists are being targeted. Their response was that ICE does not target undocumented immigrants, quote, based on advocacy positions they hold or in retaliation for critical comments they make. But they will, quote, continue to target criminal aliens whenever and however they come to our attention. Although the local police eventually released Alejandra, she was still doing periodic check-ins with ICE at the time. So by getting arrested, she was risking a lot. I asked her why she would go to a protest given her circumstance.
Yeah, that's a question that I think a lot of people have. To me, doing the work that I do is not a risk. It's not a choice. And yes, of course, people are thinking now, and even I'm thinking now, right? think twice about going and you know, being at a protest directly around DHS. But, you know, at the same time, that's what they want. They want to tear down the movement. They want to make me scared. I had all of my rights to be there. There was nothing wrong that I was doing that day.
But Alejandra started feeling worried that she was going to be detained again after the arrest at the protest. And surely enough, 3 months later in March, she was detained during one of her check-ins with ICE. In a statement, ICE says Alejandra was taken into custody after violating her order of supervision. The statement highlights that she has a criminal record that includes 2 DUIs. The arrest at the DHS protest is not mentioned in the statement. They sent her back to the same place she spent 2 years previously, the Eloy Detention Center.
Press 1 or star to accept the call. To deny this call, press 2.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Alejandra. This is Maya Cueva. How are you doing?
Hi, Maya. I'm doing okay.
That's Alejandra during a phone call we had after she had been detained for about a month.
I didn't cry for a long time until I was actually in the cell.
But this time around, she returned to Eloy as an activist. And the biggest difference? A whole mini movement started around her release.
And I am here in the studio to bring you a special mini-sode today. As many of you who follow us on our Instagram know, our dear friend, sister, fellow activist, Ale, has been detained by ICE for a total of 12 days now.
There was a petition for her to get out with more than 20,000 signatures of support. And she was flooded with letters sent to Eloy.
I get letters every day. I get books every day.
Artists were creating images of her, depicting her as a Catholic saint. Her image was splashed across hundreds of Instagrams with the caption, "Free Ale." But even with all the support, it was unclear if all of this would actually lead to her release. And her friends and family still were worried. What if she's held for years? Or gets deported? About a month after Alejandra was detained, she was scheduled for a bond hearing. The stakes were high, because if this went well for Alejandra, it would mean she would get out of detention.
So it's April 18, 10:52 p.m., the night before my sister's court hearing.
I asked her brother, Jesus, to record what it was like leading up to the day.
Can't help but think, you know, what can happen tomorrow? Just really hoping that God can just provide a way for my sister to receive a bond. She can be back with us.
The next day was the hearing. Here's Jesus.
So we just pulled up to Eloy Detention Center, and there's a bunch of guards at the entrance not letting people in. They almost didn't let my mom in. So we're about to step in here soon. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you guys know how it goes in about an hour or so.
An hour goes by, and then... On April 19th, Alejandra was granted bond and was released from the detention center. The moment is captured in an Instagram video on Mi Gente's feed. Her friends and family were there waiting, playing Cardi B's Bodak Yellow on the stereo as she walked out. She had a whole community of supporters embracing and hugging her. There were tears. And as they danced, they chanted, "Te queremos, Ale. Ale, we love you."
You can f with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the school.
So Maya, Alejandra was released. Does this mean that she gets to stay in the US for good? So no. In December, she'll have her first asylum hearing, and she could find out if she'll be allowed to stay in the country. So yeah, we don't really know what's going to happen. Even though she's released, she could still be deported. But meanwhile, she's going to host another web series with Mi Gente called Migra/Abolish ICE. And according to Mi Gente, the web series is going to tell the story of what the deportation crisis under President Trump looks like in real time. I've been talking to you a lot about this story as you've been reporting it. And what strikes me about it is it feels like the narrative around undocumented youth has changed since President Trump was elected. Obviously, a lot of people were being deported under the Obama administration. But DACA happened, and there was this like sense of hope that Dreamers might be able to get some kind of permanent status eventually. And the activists were putting forward this sort of best and brightest image we mentioned earlier. Obviously, since Trump has been elected, the entire narrative has been very different. In fact, there's been all this focus on how, like, immigrants are actually animals and sort of, like, talking about how they're not good people. And I think on the flip side, what's been happening with the activists is they're like, look, all of us are not PhD students at Harvard. In fact, some of us are girls who got two DUIs when we were in our early 20s.
Right.
But guess what? We're people, too.
And is there room for us to make these mistakes? And, you know, in a lot of ways, Antonia, for undocumented activists like Alejandra, they're still saying, yes, we're undocumented and unafraid, but now they're saying, you know, we're unapologetic as well.
This episode was reported and produced by Maya Cueva, Latino USA's New York Women's Foundation Fellow. It was edited by me, Antonia Cerejido, and Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andres Caballero, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Fact-checking by Zoe Malik. Our engineers are Ginny Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fiedelholz. Our other fellow is Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our theme music was composed by Xenia Rubinos. Special thanks to Vanessa Barchfield, Melody Rowell, Regina Rebazova, KJZZ in Arizona, and Youth Radio in Oakland, California. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm Antonia Cerejido, in for La Jefa, our host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Adios!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. Winecoat Foundation, and funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
It's no, well, Maya goes, hello.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we talk about the Me Too movement and the recent allegations against Junot Diaz.
There can be an impulse to say, like, you know, this person is dead to us forever. And I want to push us because ultimately there's so much woundedness in our community.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And on our latest episode, how Chip Wilson turned workout clothes into a fashion statement. And along the way, built a breakout brand, Lululemon, now worth billions. You can listen to How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts.